Welcome to Longevity. I'm your host, Natalie Nittam. I'm a nutritionist, a human potential and epigenetic coach, and I created this podcast to bring you the latest ways to take control of your health and longevity. We cover it all, from new technology and ancestral health practices to personalized interventions and a very special interest of mine, peptides and bioregulators. Enjoy the show. Welcome back to the show, folks. Today's episode is with my dear friend and brilliant gerontologist, Zora Benamou, host of the Hack My Age podcast. But before we jump into a bit more about this podcast and into the actual podcast, of course, I want to thank you for being here. And I'd love to invite you to go to natnittam.com, sign up for my newsletter, which is at the top of the page. And also on the website is where you can find Nat Recommends and links to other podcasts and so much more. And of course, if you love this episode, make sure that you leave us a review on whatever platform you're listening to the podcast on, because that is how we get found by more amazing people just like you. All right, let's thank a couple of sponsors, talk a little bit about the episode, and then just dive in. So we all know that we are facing a lot of enemies of longevity. Things like staring at screens all day. Hello, over here. Occasionally eating the wrong things, being deprived of natural sunlight because we're sitting in front of those screens all day, even dealing with chronic stress. These are all parts of daily life, but these are things that we have to figure out ways to hack or overcome. This is why we are biohackers. And you know me, I've tried a lot of things at least once, but it's the things that I keep doing and plan to do for a really long time. Things that are so simple, powerful, and that really work that I really love to bring to you. And every day I do one simple thing which helps me to fight a whole bunch of the enemies of longevity, and that is that I take Timeline Nutrition. Now, here's why. Longevity takes energy, cellular energy, and cellular energy comes from your mitochondria. They're like little energy factories that take in nutrients, carbs, fats, proteins, and churn out the life force that keeps you going strong today and for life. Now, recent research has shown that when your mitochondria are strong, they're not only generating energy, but they're also acting to protect your DNA. Now, Timeline Nutrition has cracked the code when it comes to optimizing your mitochondria. As a science-first company, Timeline Nutrition is founded and led by doctors and scientists. Their work is supported by 15 years of research, 11 clinical studies, and 56 patents. Timeline's MitoPure is among the most deeply studied healthy aging compounds. It's the first and only nutrient clinically shown to support mitochondrial health by triggering the body's natural process of mitochondrial rejuvenation. So Timeline Nutrition keeps your mitochondria running like well-oiled machines to make sure that you're ready to fight the enemies of longevity today and every day. Now, you can get yours. Just use code NAT10 for 10% off your order at timelinenutrition.com. Now, let's talk about this episode. If you're a woman, there's a possibility that you or a woman in your life may feel like menopause has taken over. It may leave women feeling exhausted, frustrated, and really not quite like themselves. So the good news is that if this is you or someone you know, we're not alone. Many women experience a range of challenging symptoms during this crazy transition. But the good news is that there are so many ways to manage them effectively. And in this episode of the Longevity Podcast, I sit down with my good friend and gerontologist and biohacking expert, Zora Benamou, to discuss strategies to alleviate common menopause symptoms such as hot flashes, sleep disturbances, weight gain, and low libido. We discuss the importance of addressing the root causes of these symptoms. And ultimately, we break down this complex topic into actionable steps you can start implementing today. Now, Zora Benamou is a gerontologist on a mission to disrupt menopause stigma and ageist stereotypes. She is the host of the Hack My Age podcast, focusing on biohacking for women going through the menopause transition. She is the author of the Longevity Master Plan and cookbook, Eating for Longevity, and as well as the creator of online programs for women in peri and post menopause. Now, you can find her podcast on all major platforms, and I encourage you to do so, because if you're interested in this topic, she is fantastic. She has great guests all the time. And you can also learn more about her incredible programs, as well as her private membership community and all of her other projects at hackmyage.com. Okay, one more sponsor to thank before we dive in. And you get to meet Zora, who's amazing. Now, if you're looking for a skincare solution that absolutely delivers results, you've got to know about the revolutionary benefits of Vitali Skincare, a regenerative skincare line centered on the power of one of my favorite things, GHKCU, aka a copper peptide, with an unparalleled purity of 99%. Their formulas combine GHK copper with other active natural and organic ingredients to provide your skin with the essential elements it needs to stay vibrant and healthy regardless of your age. Now, this little copper peptide has been extensively studied and proven to improve wound healing, stimulate the production of collagen and elastin, as well as glycosaminoglycans. It can help to promote hair growth, repair DNA and damaged fibroblasts, enhance antioxidant defense, and reduce inflammation. Now, by consistently using Vitali products, you're not only improving the appearance of your skin, but you're also protecting and enhancing the health of your body's largest organ. The restorative serum is available in both medical grade 3% GHKCU as well as a 2% formula, making one of the most potent products on the market. This serum is also enhanced with giant sea kelp, brown algae, which is rich in minerals and helps to combat the effects of free radicals while protecting your skin's collagen from degradation. If you need hydration, the Hydration Boost, a light, silky oil made with 100% organic squalene, is absolutely perfect. This powerful ingredient enhances your skin's water retention and protects the moisture barrier, improving elasticity and resilience. I love to use the squalene oil when I'm flying, actually. It's a great, great product for sealing in the moisture. Now, you can experience the difference of Vitali Skincare by going to vitaliskincare.com and make sure to use code Natalie20 and save 20% off your purchase. And now let's jump into the episode. Hey, folks, just a quick reminder that all of the information presented in this podcast is for information purposes only. No medical advice, no diagnosing, no treatments suggested here. Before you try anything that you hear about or learn about here, make sure that you check with your medical provider.
Zora Benamou, I cannot believe it has taken us this long to do a podcast together on this podcast. Thank you for joining me and welcome to the show.
Thanks. It's unbelievable. I can't believe I'm here. I'm super excited. I'm glad to have you on my podcast. Everyone loved you, by the way, and keeps asking you for you to come back. So we'll have to do another recording.
100%. I'd love to. But in the meantime, this one is about you, not me. And so you're my friend who, like, when we met, you were in the depths of a master's program or a PhD program? Master's on gerontology at the University of Southern California. Is that?
You got it. Good memory.
Yeah, no kidding. That just kind of came out of my mouth. I don't even know if it hit my brain. And then you graduated and you were like so deep into it. And then you came out and you're like, okay, I'm a gerontologist. And I was like, okay, we're going to have to define that word, dude, because that's going to scare a lot of people away, you know, because none of us like to think of ourselves as geriatrics. Although apparently if you get pregnant after the age of 35, you're automatically thrown into the geriatric pregnancy box, which is borderline offensive when you're 35 having a baby. But maybe you wanted to, like, what made you pick gerontology? And I mean, ultimately, gerontology is where we're going to learn about longevity. And so maybe do you want to talk a little bit about that whole piece of your life? Because I know you've done so much more work beyond that, but that is kind of like a really foundational piece of where you come from and where you look at stuff.
It's true. Actually, I tend to pick these occupations of that have most people don't even know what it is, like, or biohacking. Like, who knows what biohacking is? Obviously, people who are listening, they know, but you got to explain it all the time. And the same thing with gerontology. Some people think, oh, you're a geriatric physician. No, I'm not a geriatric physician. That's a doctor for older adults. A gerontologist is somebody who studies aging and longevity, but not only from the biological perspective, which you and I are totally love this, but also from the sociological and the psychological perspective. And we look at the whole life course from birth to death. to understand why people are aging, how they're aging, why do we get certain diseases, and then how to help those people as we go through the life course. But we do have a huge focus on older adults and advocate for them. And it's all about social policy as well, not just, you know, what's happening in a nursing home, right? So it is so much broader than what people think it is. And even when I learned about it, I originally was attracted to Dr. Walter Longo's program, mm-hmm. It was all mostly nutrition. So, you know, it was all about nutrition, longevity, and health span. And when I saw that, I was like, that's got my name written all over it. I'm doing it. But it was really to train registered dietitians, which I didn't want to do. And then when I was introduced to the gerontology program, I said, this is exactly what I want, because I know that longevity isn't only to do with what you eat, right? It's not just nutrition, so much more. And that's what it really did cover, a lot of that. So that's what gerontology is. And I hope more people embrace it a little bit. I know it needs a nasty rebrand word.
We need to rename it. Needs a rebrand. It totally needs a rebrand. But so as it turns out, so Walter Longo, the man who's behind the whole fast mimicking diet, all that research, that body of research that's really interesting, he ended up teaching a segment of your course, right? Like you took a class with him. That wasn't it at 1 o'clock in the morning or something, and you spent so much time and energy actually hacking, like biohacking. Doing a class at 1 o'clock in the morning because you insisted you had to be at that class live. I remember sitting there thinking, she's borderline nuts. But, you know, actually, as part of this episode, even though this isn't exactly what we were going to talk about, why don't you tell us a little bit, share with us a little bit what you did to biohack that crazy timing, and did it work for you? And obviously you wouldn't necessarily do this long term, but did it?
Yeah.
Do you feel that it helped?
Yes, it totally helped. And really, thank God we have these biohacks. And I knew about them because the class was starting at, it was like 1 or 2 in the morning, and it would go until 3 or 4. It was a 2-hour class.
Okay, and you stayed awake?
So yeah, I would stay awake. Sometimes I would wake up, you know, I'd go to bed. Actually, during that class, I did go to bed early. And then I woke up, and then I had my blue blocking glasses on. And I kept the lights real dim. I had the filter on the computer. I was taking supplements. I took a lot of supplements, but after the class, just to make sure I wasn't getting sleepy or groggy or anything during the class.
So what did you use for supplements?
I did a spermidine, magnesium, and glycine. It was you actually who told me about the glycine. Mm-hmm. And that was amazing. And I was very alert for the class. I had already too many questions. Dr. Longo was like, oh boy, here she is again, asking a question. Everybody was terrified of him. And I just said, screw it. I'm paying for this class. I'm going to ask all the questions I want. Yeah. And so then I turned the computer off and then shut down the lights and went to sleep like that. And I monitored everything with my Oura Ring. I didn't have a BioStrap back then. I don't think so. And my HRV was great. Everything was fine. My scores were as usual. I was shocked how I was able to hack it. And as soon as I got up in the morning, and I'm one of those people who could actually sleep in, you know, there's some people who just.
Yeah, see, I can't. That's interesting. Yeah.
I could. And I had all the lights off. I mean, I was in a room at that time where there were blinds and the room was black. Not one peep of light. Or
that helps.
Quiet. I had all the elements in my favor. So it all those hacks, they all worked. So I was really pleased.
That's so interesting. You know, actually, now that you mention it, I have been able to sleep in a bit more lately, and it's ever since I started wearing, and I don't always wear them, but I will wear my noise canceling headphones sometimes to bed. Yeah. And I will either wear an eye mask or I'll use this little pillow. I can't remember the name of it right now. But it's like an over your face pillow I use the pillow and my noise canceling headphones, and it's literally like my head's in a cocoon. And and I can't even tell when my husband and the dog get up. Like I'll wake up and I'll roll over and everybody's gone. Like, oh my God.
But the noise canceling headphones, they must be bulky, no?
Yeah, I sleep on my back.
Oh,
It's
wow. I
made
didn't
me,
know
it's
you.
made me, it's taught me to sleep on my back, which is good for your face. I mean, and I'm normally a side sleeper. Anyway, this is not about me and my sleep hacks. So I want to focus on you. So, you know, here's the thing, you guys, Zora and I are good friends and we can talk a blue streak. So I need to keep us on track so that you guys walk away not knowing about what Nat and Zora chat about when they're chatting, but I want you to walk away with some really awesome information. So your next dive, your next area of focus really has been menopause. And we're not even really going to talk about hormones here today because that's not necessarily your zone of genius. Your zone of genius is menopause. And you know, one of the coolest things about you, and there are so many cool things about you, but one of the really interesting things about you, Zora, is your insatiable curiosity. Like you are so curious, and you are so curious that you've started this incredible project because you are a digital nomad and you travel all over the world. This incredible project of talking to women in countries around the world about their menopause experience. And so it's a guys, it's on YouTube, right?
On
You're
YouTube,
curious?
Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, yeah.
Yeah.
One
So
minute reels, one
yeah.
minute.
Yeah, so they're 1 minute reels, and you may or may not recognize me on that reel. We actually happened to cross paths in Portugal last year. But you basically interview women who are either going through or in or past menopause. And really, you're kind of poking around saying, so what are worldwide women's attitudes around menopause? So maybe talk a little bit about this. We were chatting about it a bit before the podcast, but I think there's some really interesting observations from an outsider perspective, but what's your take from the inside?
So everybody's just got to go listen, watch these because you'll understand when we're talking about it that I literally go up to women on the street and I say, "Hi, can I ask you 5 questions about menopause?" So, and I have, of course, friends and women I do know, and I started with them too. So it's the questions are generally about their experience about menopause, and it depending on how they answer and where they are in their journey, I'll sort of shift the questions a bit. But it is to understand what their attitudes are like, and to show also women around the world who are watching that women have different experiences of menopause. And I get all different kinds of answers. Some women are saying, "I had a horrible time and it was a nightmare." And then I say, "What did you do about it?" And then they tell you. And then I have women who said, "Really, I felt nothing at all. I didn't change. I didn't go through menopause," which they did, but you know, they had quite a positive experience. And so what women really like in when they're watching this, either one, they like that, wow, menopause isn't only doom and gloom. There are women who are actually thriving and surviving and doing great. And, you know, then they share their tips, what they've done for it. And then you have women also resonating really well with the ones who are struggling and they say, "That's me." And then, you know, then if they just keep following Hack My Age, they'll know that there are things that they can do about it. But they really resonate. You have all different kinds of women and they do resonate. And so what we find around the world, there will be every woman still has whatever symptoms they have. It's they have the same symptoms. There's not some weirdo, you know, in Asia they have all these symptoms and here we don't in Europe or in North America. It's just we all kind of experience the same thing in that sense. Some have a different attitude towards it. Some have more intense and some have less intense, more frequency, less frequency. But women who are going through menopause, they tend to kind of go through very similar things. It's just somehow how they approach it would be different.
Yeah. So, you know, one of the things that I find really interesting about that this series is that is the variety of women. You're talking to women from not only all different countries and all different cultures, and you can explain to us how you manage in places where you don't speak the language, but also all different walks of life, right? So it would be very easy for you to say, okay, I'm going to find women who, you know, are in my space or in the health space, and they're united by this thread, right? And instead, what you've really done is you've dove in when you were in Vietnam, like it could be like a vegetable stand woman, and it could be someone who makes pho every morning, or it could be a professional. Like you really kind of cut across all of these different stratospheres of societal strata, and which I guess, you know, brings us back to what gerontology is about, which is not just nutrition and, I don't know, medication or whatever, or supplements or what have you, but it's this whole societal piece as well. So do you want to, like, because I've noticed a few different things myself, and I'm wondering about your take on it, because it seems to me that, to your point, well, I want to let you talk about it first. I don't want to say what I think. I want you to talk about it first.
Well, I do want to hear what you think. So we'll start with what are we seeing so far? And this is not, you know, I don't have thousands of people yet. I've got maybe 100 or so of women.
Pretty good.
And it's just some people. It's not like this great huge study, but it is an interesting, we can find things that are similar, some things that are different. What we do, but at least what I'm observing, is that most women I am interviewing are not on hormone therapy. Okay. And most women would say, if I ask, they would say, no, I want to go natural, or I've passed through it. I never took anything, no medication and everything. And like a badge of honor, I've suffered through this on the other side. And so the other thing is, yes, you do see women who have lower social economic status. They do look a bit more aged, than some who maybe work in an office seems to me, because a lot of these women, I have no idea what they're doing. I mean, if they're working in a fruit stand, I know that's their occupation, but sometimes I just stop women on the street and I don't know anything about them. And it's really hard to make conclusions. Sometimes these women would say, I would say, so what did you do to alleviate your symptoms? Or advice do you have for a woman going through the menopause transition now? And they'll say some crazy things like, you got to drink fruit juice something that maybe, and so I don't make these reels and edit them to have an agenda. I have no mm-hmm. agenda. I just mm-hmm. let them speak. I just ask that they say the truth. And what I also notice is that the women who I'm interviewing who are older tend to share that it's not so bad. Like everything was okay. It was not that big of a deal and they were fine. But when I interview a woman who's in her 40s and 50s, they tend to say that they're having a hard time, and they more often. Mm-hmm. And not that they're, you know, there's a little bit of everything, but some people have commented on these reels when somebody's a bit older, they'll say, oh, she just forgot.
Do you think that's true? Or do you think that modern life is because there are many things that will affect how you move through menopause, right? And how hard a time you will have, stress levels, your diet, but really I think stress is a big, big piece of the puzzle. And not that everybody doesn't have stress, but do you think it's possible that modern life has sped up to the point where it's moving us beyond our capacity to easily manage the stressors, which is having a negative impact on how women are going through menopause versus an 80-year-old woman who might have gone through it 40 years ago?
I'm not sure if it's the stress itself. It's maybe the response to stress. Mm-hmm. And it's maybe more of an attitude thing. So I do know, at least in Thailand, this is what was appearing, because I interviewed some people and also in Hong Kong as well, I interviewed the mother of someone I knew, mm-hmm. and that person was there. And so when I interviewed the mother, she would say, she was in her 70s, let's say 70s or 80s. And she said menopause was fine, not a big deal, nothing really. And I would say, do you have any mood swings, anxiety? No. And then the daughter would look at me and say, hey, mom, I think you forgot, because I remember this period very clearly. Or even the husband was there in the room and he would roll his eyes being like, wow, no, I have a different story. This is just a few cases that I've had. Yeah. That's interesting. And is it because they don't really want to make a big deal about it. They're trying to quote unquote protect the daughter by saying it's fine, which I don't know, is a strategy or not. Or is it really because they didn't, or some other reason? I don't really know, but I know that why they're doing that, I'm not really sure, but it can happen.
Well, I mean, maybe it's a bit like childbirth, right? The further away you move from it, the less you focus typically on how difficult and painful and horrible it was. And you know, that fades away, because if it didn't, probably nobody would have a second child. I mean, when we want to talk about trauma, that's pretty darn traumatizing in many different ways, right? I mean, obviously there's that beautiful pot of gold at the end of the rainbow, like, you know, your baby, but still it's a pretty difficult thing to move through. So I wonder if it's that maybe they forget a little bit. But I guess the other question is, do you think that across societal strata, again, there's different expectations about how you're going to feel or how you should feel, or, you know, do different women kind of go, yeah, it was a chore. It was a tough thing to go through. And that's what we do. Like, you know, I sometimes wonder if we have in North America and in Europe, like, you know, if we have this kind of inflated sense of our life should be easy, we should feel happy, we should feel good, we should have good energy. And then all of a sudden this comes along and kind of ruins our day. And we're like, well, what the hell? That's not okay. And you know, we're like almost offended that anything should come along and mess up our happiness, joy, and contentment kind of thing.
I do wonder, because a lot of these women, I mean, they have a hard life. I mean, I went to Thailand, I went to Vietnam, even in Hong Kong, which is, you know, it's a more wealthy country. You still have people struggling big time. And they would look at me sometimes like, this is not a big problem. Like, why are you even asking me? It's just not a thing. And I don't really care, but okay, I'll answer the questions for you. And is it because they're just worried about getting food on the table? Or is it, do you just really have so many other problems? I do notice that when I do interview, sometimes during my podcast, I would interview a woman who has gone through real difficulty in life and plenty of surgeries and diseases and illnesses. And she's now 65, and I'd ask her, how was her menopause transition? And she's like, oh my God, it was so I don't even care, because my life was so painful and so it hurt so bad. And now I'm healthy and happy. And now, like, that transition just it came nowhere close to what that person was really suffering. It didn't rank up there. Exactly. Yeah. So I think it kind of depends maybe on different experiences you have in life as well.
Yeah, no, I do. You know, I think we're kind of privileged to sit and worry about it sometimes. Now, having said that, and that is not to minimize people's experience, because we both know a lot of women who really struggle through this period of time. But, you know, I'm sure that to some of these women who kind of look at you like you're a little crazy, like, why are we even talking about this? It would be akin to sitting there saying, well, we need to. And I think we do, to a point, because it's generally speaking, the crazy symptoms are generally due to pre-existing imbalances in the body that get exacerbated by this change. But you could say the same thing about puberty, right?
Yes.
You could say the exact same thing about puberty, because it's another massive hormonal shift and change. And there's these peaks and valleys and heaves and hoes and mood swings and pain. And like, actually, it's funny, I just thought about it now as we're talking, you know, like, it's only a matter of time before some precocious kind of teenager comes out with, we need to biohack puberty. And, you know, and that population's not being particularly well served, because if anybody's even addressing it in the first place, it's to hand them a prescription for the pill and say, off you go, and we're going to make it all go away, instead of, you know, sitting with them and working with them and helping them to understand how to support their hormones and, you know, what are the things that might be making it worse for them, like the whole nine yards.
Yes.
You know, Zora, I think we need to write a book, Hacking Puberty.
Biohacking Puberty. Seriously, why has not somebody thought about that before? And if anybody's listening now, just get on it, because wow, that is brilliant.
Why, but it's why another not? Big transition. Like, and actually, absolutely. You know, and it's interesting because again, male puberty and female puberty, just like menopause and andropause, very marked experiences and transitions in life, and very different. And it's interesting that the woman's journey tends to be represented and contain a lot more pain and suffering than yes. the male side, right? Like boys go yes. through puberty too. I think the worst thing that happens to them is they get acne. Yeah. Sometimes,
yeah. Right? A voice change, sometimes crackling,
and their voice changes. But this is not painful. Like the girl yeah. is going through, like she's probably going to have really terrible cramps, and you know, and those mood swings,
and
like yeah. there's a lot of pain yeah. involved. And yeah. in menopause, you have not so much pain. Well, you do because you have joint pain, yeah. absolutely. yeah. But then you have the hot flashes and you have the cognitive issues and you have the bone issues and the weight gain. Men go through andropause. I mean, if they even register, and the funny thing about guys, I think also, is they might get put on a few pounds around the middle. They don't tend to, I mean, this is changing, but typically they don't tend to stress about it quite that much.
No, because society doesn't make it that important. Right. Yeah. Imagine the pressure that we all have. And I mean, every woman who's listening knows exactly what I'm talking about. The pressure is huge for us and not so much for the guys. Like they can go gray and have wrinkles and get a little chubby and everything's fine. Women are not allowed to do that. And it's mm-hmm. not fair.
Yeah. And somehow we're also not supposed to do cosmetic surgery to fix it. So it's a bit of a, okay. it's a bit of a yeah. tough spot, right? Yeah. I mean, look, yes. we all have to make our own decisions on that, but okay, so menopause is a thing. Let's talk a little bit about, will biohacking menopause have an impact on women's longevity? I mean, I think as a gerontologist, you are the perfect person to ask this question. Like, you know, and I guess maybe, and I don't, you know, that I'm popping this on you, so it's not like you can go back looking through your videos right now, but in place, because I've watched a lot of your videos, and it is markedly obvious to me that in certain societies, women seem to visually age faster. And usually these are women who come from, who are in from rural communities. I mean, they don't sit and worry about their skin. They don't sit and worry about, are they in shape or out of shape? Like they have way bigger fish to fry in their worlds, right? Yeah. So getting up in the morning, being productive, enjoying their life. And I'm not saying they don't have enjoyment in their life at all. And as a matter of fact, maybe they enjoy their lives more than people in more
developed society
and developed in quotation marks. Yeah. Let's just be clear by our framework, let's say. But they do seem like a 55 or a 60-year-old woman in some of these places seems to look older. Yeah. than a 55 or a 60-year-old woman in other countries. And so do you think it's impacting their longevity or is it just impacting their looks? And because they just don't pay attention, they don't have the time or the bandwidth or frankly, I don't know if they don't have the interest. Mm-hmm. That's a bit of a stretch. But what are your thoughts on that whole piece of the puzzle there?
Yeah, you can see definitely the people who don't look as they're in good condition are usually not, and they will tend to have a shorter lifespan or shorter health span. In gerontology, I mean, I always remember this professor and he said, and he was already in his 70s or 80s, I think. And he's been teaching this course for a long time. It was the sociology of gerontology and of sociology of aging. And he said, the one thing you need to live a long life is money and good genes. And I was like, what? I mean, he's just, what he was saying is that when you have a higher socioeconomic status, you have more disposable income to buy the good food and you have the resources to get the good medical care, to be educated, to read up on things that we shouldn't be doing. And so, yeah, that I think that's pretty true statement. It doesn't mean that just because you have money, you're going to live forever. And just because you don't doesn't mean we won't. But it plays an interesting role in how long you will live. And of course, your genes as well. But yeah, and I have noticed that. But I don't follow these people till they die. So I don't really know. And I don't know their history, their medical background. You know, they could be also looking perfectly healthy and well, but they're not. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
I can only go by what gerontology would sort of dictate.
Yeah. Well, you know, what's interesting about that statement by your professor is I would say yes. And it depends. It depends where you live. If you live in a big city in a modernized life, let's say, then yeah, you better have the money to be able to access the things that you need to be healthier and to stay healthier. But if you look at the blue zones, and you look at all those places where they have a disproportionate number of centenarians, they don't tend to be New York, Paris, and London, right? Like where you have a lot of people who have a lot of money. They tend to be in places that are way off the, you know, kind of off the radar, or they were anyway until we started blabbing about them.
But they're usually an island or a peninsula too.
So they're isolated. Yeah. And they're away from the hustle and bustle and the craziness of the 21st century that we live in right now, right?
Yeah.
And it is the 21st century, right? Oh my God. Talk about a senior moment. But there are ways.
Don't say that. That's ageist. It's not.
I know it's ageist. I'm sorry. So they're away from this craziness. And so maybe the real qualifier is if you live in a place like a crazy city or in an urban environment, you will need money. You will need those resources most likely to live longer and healthier versus if you happen to check out and go live in the mountains somewhere or on an island or whatever the case may be, because you naturally should have access to cleaner food, less stress, or different type of stress, your expectations are different, so stressors don't affect you the same way, then it's a different, the formula for long life, which again, if you talk to many of these centenarians, they didn't set out to live 100 years, they just did.
Yes. And right? they would do exactly what we're doing if they lived in our environment. It's their own environment is gently nudging them into a healthy diet and lifestyle and all this. It's not... Yeah, they're not quite thinking about it. It just is. And it's changing. I mean, if you look at the people in Okinawa, those centenarians, the next generation, they're not living as long.
Nope.
And they're adopting different habits and more of a modern lifestyle. It has to be also worked on So life is just gently changing.
Gently in some places and not so much in others.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Okay, so you've brought into this world of gerontology, you've brought this whole discipline of biohacking, right? You've melded to what would seem to be disparate worlds, right? The world of gerontology and the world of biohacking. Your superpower, let's say, is you've brought these things together. And so you've kind of overlaid one on top of the other. So let's talk a little bit, like from your perspective, And menopause is a hot topic for you, obviously, hot being the operative word, pun fully intended. We were going to talk about myths about menopause and then biohacks for very specific menopause symptoms. So do you want to start with maybe the myths that things that when you hear it, it just drives you bananas, and then and why they're myths, and then we'll go from there and move into those infamous biohacks.
Okay, I'll go through them quickly too, because first of all, I just want to explain the biohacking and gerontology world has been my hat for so long, and I'm so glad I was able to mend them together. But the reason I've shifted into menopause is because so many women were asking me about it, right? Mm-hmm. They wanted to know. I've had this podcast going on for 3 years. Hack My Age is all about biohacking and with a focus on women, but But definitely it's been such an important topic. And that's why I'm blending all of these things together and really focusing on the menopause, because that's what they want. And because I'm 53, I probably should find out too. So I have on this journey, there's so many myths and truths about menopause. And again, around the world, there's quite similar, actually, what we think and our attitude, not attitudes, but our beliefs about menopause can be very similar. So one top myth that absolutely drives me bananas is that hormones are dangerous. And you've had podcast guests, Dr. Carrie Jones, you've had Felice Gerrish, all these women explaining it is not. Estrogen does not cause cancer. And I wish this myth would absolutely die. And it is starting to slowly die as we have more information out there. But I feel really bad for the women, the generation before us, a couple of generations now that, yeah, got deprived of hormones and when they were really
Yeah, and
suffering.
there's plenty of women in our generation, trust me. Like I was at a dinner not too long ago with a bunch of women who are very well educated and very smart and very current and all the things, and not one of them was willing to consider hormone therapy.
Yeah,
Yeah.
it's just
It's you
crazy.
know the it's gonna, I think it's still gonna take some time. You know,
Yeah.
the big myth is estrogen's gonna give you cancer. Testosterone is a men's hormone, which, you know, it escapes many, it flies under the radar that we make more testosterone than we do anything else. You know, just those two, right? In the sex hormone front. And then progesterone just kind of gets forgotten off to the side somewhere. It has something to do with a baby or something. We don't know. So
Yes.
what could we possibly need that for when we're going through menopause? And so hormones, big myth.
Yes. Big myth. And I just want women to please go and read up on it, right? Because you can also be bullied into it and thinking, oh, I should do it. And I think that's also wrong. I just want women to please just learn about your own hormones, learn about what hormone therapy does, and then you make your decision when you talk to your doctor about the risks and the benefits, because I'm not in your body and you are, but we can't make this blanket statement that it's bad for everybody.
Yeah. And so you've got a bunch of episodes on this. I do too. Is there a book that you recommend more than any other book on
I
this
think
topic?
the
I'm
one
putting you on
is,
the spot here.
yeah, no,
Sorry.
there's a lot, but I think Estrogen Matters is the one that's the big one. It really breaks down that myth of hormones are bad. Like right? It's not about learning about menopause or anything. It's about understanding the studies that were done and how they've been translated. And then that, you know, it's Estrogen Matters by Avram Blooming. Excellent, excellent book. Okay. So the next myth is menopause only affects older women. And no, we've got perimenopause, and women still don't know what that word is. They keep saying premenopause, and premenopause is different than perimenopause. Premenopause is when you get your period when you're 13 or 10 or 12, whatever it is now, all the way up into perimenopause, which is around your 40s, okay, mid-40s, and peri meaning around menopause. So menopause on average, that hits women, meaning you have 12 consecutive months without a period, average is 51. In India, it's like 48, but whatever. We're talking just about North America and Europe, 51. So then that means around 46, you're in perimenopause, right? You're mid-40s. That's when you start having these menopause symptoms. Not everybody, and not as intensely on everybody, but it's very, very common. And many times you never make this association that it is menopause because people think, oh, I'm losing my mind. I must be getting older. I'm getting tired. I must be getting older. I am getting weight. You know, but it's not getting older, it's menopause, right? And they just think, oh, I don't have hot flashes, so I'm not going through menopause. Hot flashes are not the only thing that happens in menopause. And so, yeah, please, women, just be aware. In your 30s, I don't know if ever any of your guests have talked about this, but this is something fascinating. Is in your 30s is when you have this steep drop in progesterone. Right? This is something you in your 30s, you're not thinking about. You're miles away. You're thinking menopause is after the age of 50.
Well,
But
these
in your
days
thirties,
you're often having babies in your 30s, right?
yes. And you have a huge drop, much, much steeper than estrogen in your 40s. Estrogen in your 40s starts to take this decline, and it sometimes feels like it's a real steep fall, but usually it's just a gradual decline. Whereas progesterone in your 30s, it goes and it goes real fast at the same time. So you won't be thinking about perimenopause when you're in your 30s. Certainly not. But just to keep in mind, if you're having menopausal symptoms or symptoms like, and it's, again, it's not hot flashes. It can be, but it's more like having trouble sleeping at night and mm-hmm. a bit of anxiety, a little bit more stressed out. it could be many things, of course, but I'm just saying, keep in mind, maybe you want to check your progesterone and maybe top up with a little progesterone. Such a simple hack. But 40s, definitely. I was not thinking about menopause when I was in my 40s. Were you?
I actually, what happened was, and I think I was in my early 40s, and I know that, I mean, definitely perimenopause can start before your mid-40s. It can start in your early 40s for some women, even late 30s. And I think part of that progesterone disappearance is a big piece of it. But I just remember at some point in my early 40s going into my GP and mentioning, you know, wow, like and maybe it was my mid-40s. I don't really remember when this was, but going in and saying, you know, like I used to be able to set a clock by when my cycle, like, you know, I had a regular 28-day cycle, like clockwork, didn't particularly have bad cramps. Like my mood was okay, blah, blah, blah. But all of a sudden the week before my cycle comes, I'm a raging lunatic. I get the worst debilitating cramps, which I've never had in my life. And now my cycle is a moving target. And she kind of laughed. She smiled. She was not unkind, but she said, well, get used to it. This is perimenopause. Enjoy the ride. And I was kind of sitting there going, well, wait a minute, that's all you got? I mean, and that was before I was really into this space. And I just kind of went, this really sucks. And at the time I turned to traditional Chinese medicine. I turned to acupuncture, and that really, the acupuncture and traditional Chinese medicine, you know, when they give you all these little pellets and you have no idea what's in them, but you take them anyway, because you kind of feel like crap and you're hoping they'll make you feel better. And the doctor who's a medical doctor, but a doctor also of traditional Chinese medicine from China, I would say she got me through the worst of my menopause symptoms. Just with acupuncture and traditional Chinese medicine.
Amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. So there's many different ways to skin the cat.
Yes, absolutely. And then you started taking hormone therapy, right?
I did. I took hormone. I use BHRT. I have been since I was in menopause.
Okay. Interesting. So yes, perimenopause is a word that still so many women have no idea what it is. And if you're a man listening, please, first of all, if you got this far, kudos to you.
Congratulations. Yeah.
Congratulations. And that means you care about women, because you probably have one in your life, and you got to be aware of all these things. So menopause does not only affect older women. And then we didn't even mention early menopause and premature menopause, but mm-hmm. yeah. 30s, 40s, pay attention to this. This myth number three is life is over after menopause, or you can place the word life with sex is over after menopause. And no, this is not, this is the information we get so often from social media. And that's why a lot of people like my channel, because they're like, oh my God, finally a breath of fresh air. It's not all doom and gloom. Mm-hmm. And we can do a lot about that. So no, in Asian, like in Japanese and in Chinese, the translation for menopause is either rebirth or freedom. It's like new life. And I love these translations, because that's to me what it is. It's a growth period. It's a new phase. And so yes, no, life is definitely not over, and sex is definitely not over. And unless you don't want to pay attention to that. And unfortunately, low libido is a very common menopause mm-hmm. symptom, and a lot of women kind of put that to the side, like it's not as important as everything else. And I tend to disagree. You can ask your partner how she or he is doing with that, because maybe you're not having the low libido, you are, and they're not. So I think I would put that high in the list to get that sorted. If you are.
Well, we're going to talk about biohacks for that and some of the reasons. I mean, low libido is just one piece, right? You have changes in tissue, you have changes in hydration, and all of these add up to, frankly, sex is a lot less fun unless you take steps to make it fun.
Exactly.
But to your point, if you happen to be in a relationship, that physical connection that you get from intimacy is very hard to replace. And, you know, it shouldn't go unnoticed, the number of relationships that go through a very difficult transition and sometimes end either while moving through or on the other side of this transition. And maybe if we were supported in addressing these issues at the time, I'm not saying it would save people's marriage necessarily, but maybe it might save a couple. Maybe.
I think it would. It certainly would help.
Yeah.
Both people, both parties. I mean, this is, if you're with somebody in a relationship, it takes two to tango, right? So
yeah.
I'm so proud of those men who are learning about menopause too. I have menopause programs. I've had men buy them, and I'm like, wait, you can't come to like the live sessions, but why? And they said, well, I'm buying this for my wife because I need to help her.
Oh,
and
that's great.
Just
that's amazing.
Love those guys.
Yeah. They're finds. They're keepers.
They're keepers. So nice. So myth number four, all women experience the same symptoms. Well, as we spoke about before, definitely not. and it's funny because I have comments on these reels where women are saying, you know, I haven't felt anything, maybe a hot flash, been quite easy, not that big of a deal. And I've had women comment and say, no, she's lying. That's a bunch of BS. It's not possible. I have 20 hot flashes a day. How can she not have it? And it's like, wow, you know, this is somebody who still has that myth, believes that myth that all women have the same transition. Just ridiculous. So please, we all are different.
Let's release that.
Yes. And then the last one, some women don't get menopause. And this I've told you, in when I interview somebody and they're like, really, no transition. I didn't have menopause. No. And I'd ask if you still have a period, and they said no. And I said, well, you're clearly in menopause. You did go through menopause. It's just they didn't feel the symptoms. And just because you don't feel symptoms doesn't mean that nothing's happening in the body.
Yeah.
And you have to look under the hood. Right. Mm-hmm. Anyways, if you still need your checkups, you still need to check your bone density, your cardiovascular health. These are markers that you have to still look at, because they are likely going to change, even though you haven't changed anything in your life. But because of the lack of hormones, you may start to have osteopenia or osteoporosis, right? You still have to get your mammograms. You still need to look at everything under the hood. You can't just assume menopause didn't happen. So that's
For sure. And I think, I mean, and then the mammogram thing is pretty controversial, but you need to get your breast checked for sure.
Yeah.
One way or another. And then, there's no doubt that the loss of hormones, the loss of estrogen, the changes with progesterone and testosterone, all of these hormones have physiological effects on your entire body, like in your brain, in your heart, in your cardiovascular system, as you mentioned, your bones, your muscles, your ability to build muscle. All of these things will decline and change to a degree. And just because you don't acknowledge it or notice it necessarily, and especially, like, you know, if it's a very gradual decline, you're not necessarily going to notice it. It doesn't mean that it's not happening. Now, you may choose to address it directly or not address it directly. And we're going to talk about, you know, some of the biohacks that you talk about on five different aspects of menopause. So it's not, I mean, as you said earlier, hormone replacement therapy is not necessarily for everybody, but there's still ways of supporting your body and supporting your system so that your bones don't melt, your muscle doesn't disappear, and your brain doesn't shrivel up. Like, at the end of the day, there's ways of supporting the body if we're aware and if we have the bandwidth to consciously address these things. So are we done with the myths? Was that it?
Yes, we're done with the myths. So the top ones, of course, there's
more, of course. So now let's move into the biohacks, because let's give our listeners something to kind of take home with them. So we said we picked five biohacks, and number one, we're going to talk about the big one, because it's the most unpleasant, the most visible, and the most distressing in many ways for women who really experience these, and those are hot flashes. So, I mean, I talked a little bit about one that I, and I don't even want to call it a biohack because it's from another discipline of medicine, if you will. But what are the biohacks that you recommend for women who are going through hot flashes?
Yeah, I mean, that is part, definitely do not put Chinese medicine under the table. It's powerful. It works. It doesn't work for everybody, but again, it's one of those things you want to try. And so across the board, at least if you look at the research, you try to find what's the most effective for hot flashes, and it's still across the board, the hormone therapy. Mm-hmm. And, but not everybody wants to do it or chooses to do it. So we need other alternatives, right? But when you talk about biohacking, wow, here's something, an external thing we can take in our body and then change it completely physiologically. That's biohacking. And I love that. So, but that's that sometimes I often talk about whether you're taking hormone therapy or not, you still need to do the hard work. You can't just out hormone a bad diet and lifestyle. Mm-hmm. Okay. Your hot flashes, you know, they may dissipate or go reduce in frequency or intensity, but you'll get so much more out of it if you actually take care of your body and your diet, your lifestyle, the sleep, the stress, and all of that. So please, HRT is just one. A lot of women notice that their hot flashes are triggered by stress or some mm-hmm. stressful event, right? Yeah. So if you journal or if you take note, a mental note at least, when do your hot flashes come? Sometimes it comes in the middle of a presentation. You're a little bit nervous, right? Before you go off and your blood starts to flow and you get hot, right? You'd get hot anyways, but then you may trigger an actual hot flash. So anything that, reduces stress, and we can go through like a ton of stuff, but we're not going to because you have full podcasts on that.
Yeah, but why don't we pick a couple?
Yeah. So there's a typical, we're not going to talk about the meditation, the yoga and stuff like that.
Although they are a thing.
They are a thing. Not for everybody, but those are great. And if you can do them, fabulous. If not, one of my favorite techniques is NuCom. Mm-hmm. And you've spoken about this as well. And I learned about it actually from you from the first, in the first place. Yeah. And I called it meditation made easy because I haven't been able to be that focused with meditation. I'll do it every day, but my monkey mind just goes. And NuCom, just whenever it starts to go away, it brings it right back in. And NuCom, I'm not sure if we should even explain what that is. Do you want me to say what NuCom is?
Yeah, I mean, I would say very briefly, you know, it's an app and it's soundtracks that are, you know, it's music wrapped around kind of binaural beats. They've got, you know, and the cool thing about NuCom is it's very portable because all you need is a pair of headphones, an eye mask, which frankly, you can hack an eye mask with a t-shirt or whatever, or a scarf, whatever you want to cover your eyes, and your phone, your smartphone. And then if you have the biosignaling discs, it takes it up a notch. But
yeah,
that's, yeah. I mean, it's a really, NuCom's a very interesting hack. Like now I use it, especially when I'm traveling across time zones and stuff like that. Like I find it a very effective.
Mm-hmm. And on top of that, actually, you're also a fan of BrainTap, which I know a lot of people love. I've tried it once with you. And that again is another thing, calms the nervous system. And it's like a step up from NuCom where you have a mask and you have the lights.
I don't
right?
think I'll, I mean, from a hardware point of view, it's a step up from NuCom, but it is definitely, it's a different philosophy altogether.
Okay.
Because you've got so the light and the sound.
Yeah. But it's puts you into its calm state, right? Does it make you, it's not supposed to make you excited. It's supposed to de-stress you as I understand, right?
100%. Well, both of them, right? So both of them, the goal of both of them is really to get ourselves into a more parasympathetic state.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
So to balance the nervous system, and to your point, those hot flashes more often than not is a nervous system that's kind of gone haywire. And so if we can get into one of these practices that trains us to train our nervous system to be more steady eddy, then maybe we'll have less heaves and hoes and fewer of those crazy hot flashes. What about liver support? Have you found that to be helpful, like to help helping
with the hot
flashes? Supporting, yeah, supporting the liver, because a big piece of the hot flashes is hormonal. And so I've found that sometimes helping women to find a good liver support formula can help, just because it's supporting the liver in its ability to detoxify excess hormones, that can sort of help to smooth the edges. It's not going to make the hot flashes go away typically, but it might be helpful.
I would say yes, that the liver and the adrenals, like B complex vitamins, will be helped, because this is where your when your ovaries start to shut down the production of estrogen, then your adrenals start to take over, and then they get overworked. So we need to support that, and that's like you said, it's just like smooths out the rough around the edges. It's just sort of like, I guess it's more like damage control.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. And what are your thoughts on, because I think what happens to a lot of women going through menopause is they will turn to wine.
Yes.
I mean, yes. How many wine memes have you seen now? Oh, like, yes. they never end. And, you know, the challenge with wine, of course, is it's that double whammy, because not only are you not supporting your liver to detox, but you're now burdening it further and giving it yet another job when it's already got so much, and the adrenals.
Yeah. And then you're leaving the estrogen in a toxic state in your body, because alcohol has to go down first, down the liver, to the liver to be detoxified. So then estrogen has to sit and wait and circulating in your body in a toxic state. And we don't want that. So I always think that, gosh, every time a woman drinks a glass of alcohol, she's actually putting her life out there for you, just to be your buddy of drinking with you, because there are risks, right? There's just putting her body into a toxic state in terms of the, you know, I'm talking about the estrogen bit. After that, I learned about that component, and I was like, oh my gosh, really? I mean, I don't want to demonize alcohol, which I am right now, but it's just about being aware. Okay. Mm-hmm. That it's not just, I guess once in a while is not a problem, but if you're doing this day in and day out, then it has a little bit of a buildup. I guess one cigarette's not going to kill you, but I guess if you smoke regularly, probably not a good idea, right?
Hey guys, if you've been following me for a while, you've probably heard me talk about Level Up Health, one of my absolute favorite supplement brands. Kyle Vanderleest, my good friend, fellow nutritionist, and founder and master formulator, spares no expense when designing stacks to be the most efficacious, no matter what it takes. Level Up Health's product range is truly unique, and their flagship product, Ultimate GI Repair, combines the best naturopathic botanicals and nutritionals with powerful, orally bioavailable peptides used in functional and integrative medicine to deliver a stack that actually works to restore gut health. The feedback from community members has been incredible. He's also got incredible liver detoxification stack. He's got BPC-157 with PEA and or KPV. Like, just has some amazing products. Many of these formulations were created not only to address specific health goals, but also to reduce the multiple 6 to 12 products you might need to take and to simplify it down to an all-in-one product. Kyle is constantly innovating and expanding the product range. Recent additions include an oral GHKCU stack, as well as a tributarin stack for gut health. You got to check out his website. It's leveluphealth.com. Level has no E's, so lvluphealth.com. And check out the full range of unique products that they have to offer. Use code NAT10 for 10% off your order. Now let's get back to the episode.
And you just mentioned estrogen. So I do want to clarify for the audience, what we're talking about here is not, because we'd said earlier, one of the big myths is that estrogen is going to drive cancer. What we're talking about here is what happens with estrogen in the body is it gets converted into different forms of estrogen. Now, depending on a bunch of factors, including your genetics and others, there are three different forms of estrogen that your estrogen can get converted into, some of which are more toxic. Those could be a problem potentially. And so it's really important. I know in holistic nutrition land, we speak about the make sure that the pathways of elimination are open. And that is that the liver is functioning, and constipation is another big one that you're eliminating regularly, because that's how your body gets rid of those more toxic forms of estrogen. And that is through the stool.
Yes. Thank you for clarifying that. Because yeah, we don't want people to, yeah,
get
they can
confused.
Use mixed up
Yes.
for sure.
We just said estrogen doesn't cause cancer,
I
and now
know.
we're sick. So, all right.
Yes.
Okay.
You mean those metabolites?
Number two, poor sleep.
Yes. Okay.
How are we going to hack
One
sleep?
thing we didn't, one thing I did want to mention about the hot
Yeah.
flashes is also exercise is really important.
Yes.
It's really good. Even though you may go, wait, that's going to make me hot. I'm sweating. It's what you want to do is try to get into a healthy body composition, have the right amount of fat in your body. And because if we have excess fat, then it's an accumulation of excess estrogen. And of course, we do find some research out there showing that exercise is really, really good for your hot flashes.
Yeah.
And pretty much every other menopausal symptom. So I will mention exercise in every single one of these. You can apply it
Amazing.
everywhere.
For
Yeah.
sure. For sure. Plus, I think exercise also is good for the vascular system, which plays a role in the hot flashes. It's really good for balancing the nervous system, which is really good for hot flashes. So all of the things. But do you find, like, we're going to talk and we're going to mention exercise in the next few as well, but any words to our listeners about how they may want to change their exercise, how they may need to change their exercise routine as they're moving through menopause?
Oh yeah, absolutely. For sure. We especially our generation is the Jane Fonda, aerobic, let's just run all the time generation as fast as you can on a treadmill. Those days are gone. The chronic cardio is gone. So, and I know you've talked about this so much as well, so we won't go on too much of it, but it's the strength training that needs to be done, lifting heavy weights, building muscle, not only because that's the more muscle you have, the more metabolically flexible you'll be, because as we go into menopause, we become more insulin resistant, but we also want to be able to not accumulate as much fat, right? If you have more muscle. So that for sure, lifting heavy weights, obviously in a safe way with, knowing how to do this, but also recovery. Okay, I want people to learn about recovery because we can say, oh, we start exercising like crazy, but we need to recover differently. We need to spend more time. And I did a great course with Dr. Stacey Sims called Menopause for Athletes. An athlete is anyone who does any kind of planned exercise. And she stresses so much and about this. It's how we especially if we tend to be exercising our whole lives, we go, oh, we just need a day to recover. All right. Oh, that's whatever it is. You
If
put in
that,
the number of days.
yeah.
And so we have it in our head, but our bodies actually need more time. And so you do just be aware of recovery. Recovery is you gotta, that's your superpower. Just please recover. And again, just because I say strength training doesn't mean forget the cardio and forget the flexibility and the yoga and all this stuff. I very promote a well-rounded program where you get the cardio, the flexibility, and the strength in there. So
Yeah.
I seen that just works for me, works for my clients, and the research is showing all of that is really important as we age.
Yeah. And maybe just a little less of the chronic cardio, a little more of HIIT training, a little more shorter,
Yes.
with different types of variation in intensity. Okay.
Yes.
Are we ready for sleep?
Yes. Okay.
Biohacks
Sleep.
for sleep.
The big thing, progesterone. Okay, again, here
As
comes
it
the
turns
hormone
out,
therapy. Such a big player in people's sleep, and as well as that waking up at the 2 a.m. with a racing mind kind of problem. Progesterone is so good for that. It doesn't, not everybody, again, across the board with all of these hacks is gonna have the same effect, but it's just such an easy hack to go to. But other sleep, my gosh, it is so important to just go back to all of those sleep episodes that you have, because we could go on forever. But I do want basically what we're doing is all the biohacks in general, we want to be able to use them for our menopause transition. And so anything that has to do with setting your circadian rhythm, like that means getting out stores first thing in the morning, getting the light into your eyeballs, and red light therapy is fabulous as well for the sleep. So if you've got one of those little devices like a Flex Beam or one of those panels or any of the other ones, I have the most experience with Flex Beam. Again, thanks to you, Natalie. just Flex Beam to
Anytime.
me. I just love that device, and I get such great feedback about it too. So, and I use that as part of my stack actually at night, because I'm always dealing with hip issues and joint pain and stuff. So I put that on my hips or my back right before I go to bed. And I literally cannot get past a second cycle because I fall asleep in 2 seconds. Yeah. But that really helps. And that's then, awesome. Of course, it's doing a lot of great stuff on the inside as well. But peptides, I mean, you're the peptide queen. And I also learned from you Epitalon, right?
Yeah, the bioregulator. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Can help to reset circadian rhythm for sure.
It's a hack that no, you can't Google this stuff and say, you know, what can I do for hot flashes or poor sleep, menopause, poor sleep, and Epitalon's not going to pop up. Sorry. Unless you're in the biohack.
And it actually will, you know, the pineal gland bioregulator could be helpful for hot flashes. I've definitely seen it be helpful for women's reestablishing their cycles along with the ovarian bioregulator. And there's an adrenal bioregulator in there too. But the other thing about sleep, I think another big mistake that that people make, so they wake up, you mentioned that 2 or 3 a.m. wake up with a racing mind, and they'll look at their phone, they'll turn on the lights, they'll go downstairs. And I think that's where if you only use them then, using your blue blockers at that time is critical, like keeping the light out of your eyes. Resisting
your
temptation,
phone,
like journal if you have to. Basically, you want to bore yourself back to sleep. So yes. I think one other hack that maybe I'm stealing your thunder a little bit, but another one that's really great and also for hot flashes and easy and free is just breath work. Like doing
you stole it from me. That was my next one.
Okay, sorry. So you describe it. I'm not going to describe it. You go.
Literally on the next slide, I was like telling myself, do not forget about breath work.
Don't forget about breath work. Tell us about breath work.
Oh, I'm so happy you agreed though too. And that's important because I did the Oxygen Advantage training breathing instructor. So I so believe in it. I'm so convinced. And this course was very much into the science and explaining. So I could explain to you what's really happening. But breath work in that 2 a.m. waking is so good. So learn something. And I heard you on a podcast with, actually, I think it was a hormone expert, and you were talking about breath work and how great it is. But you also mentioned something new to me, which was, and it was like some Hawaiian name where you tell yourself you're safe or
Ho'oponopono prayer.
Yes.
Yeah. No. So the Ho'oponopono prayer is, I think I'm saying it right. I learned about this in school. When I went back to school to study nutrition, I'm not going to recite it now because it's long, but it is, you know, all of these things, whether it's a box breath or a 4-7-8 breath, like where you, I mean, really, it's just about have a longer exhale than inhale. That's all it's really about.
Yes.
Right. I mean, you're the expert on breath, not me, but you know, and it's funny because sometimes I've talked to people about counting it out and for them, the count's too long. Like they can't inhale for 7 because they have some restriction and they start to panic. You know what, guys, just adapt it. If you can only inhale to 6, then you're going to exhale for 8. If you can only inhale to 4, you're going to exhale for 6. The actual numbers don't matter that much. It's the proportion. Would you agree with that?
Exactly. Because then an inhale that activates the sympathetic nervous system. What's happening is that the lungs are actually squeezing the heart. And so you're in like almost a little panic state, like, oh my God. So of course it's natural. Somebody's not going to be able to take in a lot of air, a lot of breath. They may not want to naturally, but in the exhale, that's when everything's released, the heart relaxes and you shift into that parasympathetic mode. And that's why we always want to have the exhale a little bit longer than the inhale. And it does magic. I swear, it's just gotten me through so many nights where I'm like, what's going on? And you just, seriously, that's really good. I'm so glad you mentioned that too.
All right. So blue blockers and breath work in the middle of the night. Pineal gland bioregulator, if that's your jam.
Yes, the pineal bioregulator and the stack that you taught me, the glycine, the magnesium, the spermidine, like that is a really great stack. In my community, at least, I get a lot of feedback with that. It's not just me.
Oh yeah, magnesium and glycine before bed is brilliant, and spermidine for sure.
And of course, exercise in the morning, right? Mm-hmm. Because that's setting your circadian rhythm. And if you do exercise too close to bedtime, you're going to be wide awake. So
100%. Other than just maybe a couple of stretches before bed, apparently are quite good.
Yes. Right? We're at our time. So, okay. and, Yeah. So, okay. Actually, you may want to throw in cold therapy as well.
For sleep?
Sleep. Yeah.
Not in the middle of the night, to be clear.
No, not in the middle of the night. No, no. Before bed.
Do not get out of bed to take a cold shower, but yes.
Yeah. There was an interesting study, I think, from the University of Kent that did some study on, I'm not sure if it was cryotherapy or cold showers, but they had a 40 to 50% improvement in sleep quality.
Yep.
And that also the same university also had talked about cryotherapy for hot flashes as well, 50% mm-hmm. decrease in hot flashes. So
that's again,
that biohack of cold therapy, whether it's a cold shower or ice bath, you know, cooling down before bed is a good idea.
Yeah, which is counterproductive, right? Because people often say, oh, you need a hot bath before bed. And which I actually think there's data on both sides of the equation. And it's about people figuring out which one works for them. But there's some data that says that something hot, like a hot shower before bed, can be helpful. But for other people, you don't have to jump into an ice tub, to be clear. You could just take a quick shower and flip the water to cold for 30 seconds, a minute. You might find that you build up your tolerance over time. And then for other people, it's that cold that helps them to sleep better.
Yeah. Oh, there's no doubt hot baths can also, because that's how it raises your body temperature. So your body shifts into cooling it down, right? Mm-hmm. So you're just shifting and you just keep going and fall right into sleep. So like, I agree with you. And that's what biohacking is all about, is self-experimentation. You do what works for you. So no matter what the studies say, the only person that counts in the room is you.
Yeah. 100%. I love that. That's 100% true. Okay. Next up, weight gain. Bum, ba-da.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think if we didn't get fat, we'd put up with all the hot flashes on the planet. But the big injustice is you're steaming like a furnace, and you look down and there's just more of you than there was last week.
Terrible. It's like this weight, this middle weight gain, right? Or the belly fat. I hate that word, but okay, it's the one we use. But that one is just so, a lot of people don't understand what's going on because their diet and lifestyle hasn't changed. Their exercise, food, same. And you feel bad. You're like, I'm finding is a lot of women are exercising too much and eating too little. Mm-hmm. So, because, you know, it's kind of, what would you do when you gain weight? You go back to what worked when you were 20s and 30s, but it's not working anymore in your 40s and 50s. And so what you try to do is more of it. And so please, ladies, if you are not eating much and exercising too much, give yourself a break. Stop fasting. Stop this limited calorie diet, restricted diet, and overtraining. Really, you got to get appropriate amounts of food and appropriate amounts of exercise. Okay. We won't go into what that is because we want to focus more on biohacks and other things, but please, like if you're in a low energy state or low energy availability, you're just going to keep piling on pounds in the belly, right? That's mm-hmm. just cortisol mm-hmm. going into overdrive. And then with the loss of estrogen, okay, and the loss of testosterone, and even progesterone plays a role in our muscles build up and break down. It just makes everything so much harder, right? So keep in mind, it's normal, right? If you're trying to lose the fat and gain the muscle, it's a little bit harder. Again, hormone therapy, please talk to your doctor about that. It may give you a little bump. It's not mm-hmm. like going to be the end all solution, but it might help a little bit. Right.
Yep. And so what have you found to be a good biohack around the weight gain though? So rebalance the diet. I think, you know, prioritizing protein's a big one for women in menopause. And I mean, any woman really, but.
When you say prioritize the proteins, I also want women to think about eating their protein first.
Yes.
Before anything else on their plate, and make sure protein's in each meal. Okay.
Mm-hmm. 100%.
It's not just bookending it at the end.
Yeah. Yeah. But so what are other biohacks you found for the weight gain? I mean, you know, interestingly enough, I think that if you go back to the biohacks for the hot flashes and the poor sleep, there is, again, you're going to find your biohacks for weight gain. Like by improving your sleep, that blood sugar regulation gets better. The exercise helps with the insulin sensitivity that's not getting better through menopause. Obviously, it's actually worse, which if we can improve insulin sensitivity, we're not going to gain as much weight. Any other biohacks you've found in your communities or in your programs to be really helpful?
Yes. I'm so glad you actually had tied those together and have noticed them, but they're threaded all throughout because it can help so many of the other things. So it goes without saying, yeah, like just like you said, the diet and the exercise, we have to be aware of what's going on. But katsu bands are really great when we're trying to find, again, thanks to you, Natalie. I just have to give you all this credit. Like, I didn't know about some of these things, or at least I maybe heard of them, but you were the one who really encouraged me to just take a deeper dive into it. And I got my katsu bands. I love them. And as you know, I've been up on blocks, not being able to train like I normally do. And katsu since March, so when I started using them, and I still use them now, it's almost a year later, I have not lost any muscle considering how little exercise I do right now, because I'm just kind of sorting out this hip issue. So it's been fabulous. And I measure it all with the body composition scales. I know they're not totally accurate, but I can see trends, and I'm not trending away unless I stop using them. And I lent them to somebody for a month, and then I saw my muscle mass start to go down. Wow. So I'm back on them.
Yeah, they're an investment, but they're definitely worth, I think, you know, for people who can afford them, who can make that leap, they are a total game changer. And I know you've done a couple of podcasts with them. I've done a couple of podcasts with them. Like, I can't stop talking about them because they are just, you know, as a matter of fact, I was in my chiropractor's office yesterday. I brought my katsu bands for show and tell. And I said to him, the magic of these is, no matter how many people there are in your household and what they do and what age they are and what stage they're at, there's an application for them. So it's a long-term investment, but it's applicable to anyone in your life. Like, my husband, who's a swimmer, uses them. My son, who's 23 years old in law school, I haven't quite gotten him to use them yet, but he could be using them. An elite athlete can use them, and somebody's grandmother can use them. You know, like, it's literally,
or handicapped if you're losing, if
handicapped
you lost a limb.
People. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm. 100%. Someone who's in a wheelchair can use them. Like, it's remarkable.
Yeah. There's a lot of studies and evidence on it. And in case anybody has no clue what we're talking about, these are blood flow restriction bands, and they're different than the normal ones that you'd get because they have this cycling process.
It's not variable.
You can do constant, but you can vary it. And that's what I think the magic, the way I understand it, the magic happens with that. And they're so much easier to use than a band that's constricted on me, because I can't wear those for more than 10 minutes. And I'm like, my arms are killing me, and I have to put them away.
And you'll suffer from compartment syndrome. I mean, like, you can only keep those on for so long. Katsu was actually invented by the man who brought us blood flow restriction. And actually, when you talk to Steve Minutonis, he'll often say blood flow restriction is actually not the proper term. It's occlusion. Like, they're doing is they're restricting the venous return of blood back to the heart. So it's basically allowing the muscle to get engorged with blood, and then you do your exercise cycle with that engorgement, and then it releases for 5 seconds. It allows for a very brief replenishment, like exchange, and then you're at it again. It's pretty remarkable. And to your point, and it's, and I think maybe you want to talk about this, it's the effect of katsu on hormones. That is a big piece of the puzzle here.
Yes. And the big one is the growth hormone, honestly. That's the
and testosterone.
Hormone and the growth hormone and the testosterone. But this is, for me, I've never injected growth hormone in myself. I've been a little bit scared of it.
You don't need to. I've seen you. You don't need to.
Exactly. I mean, I even if I needed to, I would be a bit wary about it. I just don't know enough about it. But I just love the idea of, wow, I can actually activate my own growth hormone. And that's amazing. And if anybody has been listening, we've been talking about, this is the issue, the symptom of menopausal weight gain, but we're just talking about muscle building, right? We haven't talked about weight loss, fat loss, we're really focusing on building muscle. And I think that should be the goal of every woman going through menopause, is to understand that. And please, yeah, that's why katsu is great. Eating the protein is great. And the hormones, you know, the hormones are there to help you build the muscle. And I can't not mention the weight loss peptides. I mean, you're the queen to understand about that. And you've done many podcast episodes on that, but I almost don't want to say it's biohacks are usually people don't really know so much about them, but it seems like the whole world is talking about Ozempic and Mounjaro and, you know, all these other, the semaglutides that are out. But I think if all else fails, you know, you've really tried hard. Why not? Right there you go. And that'll help you with a lot of that.
Yeah. And just the caveats are that they have to be used properly. And so it's all the things that we're talking about. It's the prioritizing protein, the prioritizing sleep, the weightlifting. Those are the proper ways to tap into those peptides, because then they can help to move the needle when you're just stuck. Okay. We're going to run out of time. There's two more we want to get to. There's libido and energy. So
Let's go quickly on those.
Yeah.
So libido, I'm going to go to estriol, right? Estriol is a great, it's not libido. It's for vaginal dryness. I had in my mind vaginal dryness and low libido. So low libido, they do go hand in hand. You may have a low libido just because you're lacking the testosterone and all the other hormones, but you're also may not want to have sex because your vagina is all dried out. So you need to get lubricated, and estriol is a really good one for that. Of course, testosterone is such a go-to when it comes to low libido in menopause. And of course, there's, in terms of the little biohacks, other biohacks, there's supplements that can improve blood flow that I think are really important, like nitric oxide.
Yeah.
And of course, exercise. Exercise helps a lot with building the testosterone. So if you don't want to go supplement with it, and I would say also look into adding a little spice into your life with Susan Brett. You know Susan Bratton. You've met her, right? And you've had her on the show.
She
both you and her were in my energy reboot menopause program. So she talked so much about, obviously low libido and menopause, but she talked a lot about her toys. She's got like a favorite toy list. And I think the ones that, in terms of the biohacking stuff that I thought was really cool, was the V-Fit, which uses, it's a vibrator. It's also a red light therapy. It's actually rejuvenating the vagina at the same time. So you're not only having fun with it, but you're actually doing something really good for you. So you're having fun as well. So that one, the other one she talked about is called the FemiWave, and that's shockwave therapy. I think you need to get that at a clinic or something. I think it's quite a big thing, but that is another thing to improve everything down there.
Blood flow, right? Yeah. I think FemiWave is a little like Gainswave. Gainswave for the boys, FemiWave for the women.
Yeah. So yeah, just briefly,
those
ignore
are great
that.
Biohacks. Yeah. Those are great. Super. And then the last but not least, which really gets fed by everything up here, right? It's the culmination, is the drop in energy women experience when they're going through perimenopause. And sometimes even on the other side of menopause, it's just this general kind of lackluster feeling. Their battery's running low. So I know that you have a whole program around this. So without giving away the program, because I think that's the 4-week one, or is that the hot one?
Yes.
So your 4-week program on energy is a fantastic thing. And you have the evergreen, like people can just go through it on their own, or you do regular cohorts through the year where you're doing it live with people. But let's talk a little bit. Let's give people like a tiny little appetizer of a couple of biohacks they can use for energy.
Yes. Okay. So, wow, there's a lot to cover here. I'm trying to give you just little ones.
Just pick two.
Everything we spoke about, first of all, Yes, all of that helps with mitochondria. So we talk a lot about a mitochondria in the program to understand what mitochondria is. It's the powerhouse of the cells. You did a great section all about nutrition and food and how to get more energy with that. But let's add a little couple more things. I do believe that the flex beam is really good for building up energy because, again, it gets right into the mitochondria. We can't talk about getting more energy if we don't talk about getting rid of the toxins in the body, right? There could be oxidative stress, a lot of toxins running around. And so the first part of the program is let's get rid of the stuff first. And I love your burning house analogy where you explain how you can expect to build a new kitchen if your house is burning down. Yeah, you could kind of change the plumbing or throw a bunch of biohacks at it, but
it's going to burn down.
It's going to burn down anyway. So that's why we talk a lot about, let's just get rid of the junk food. Let's get rid of toxins that are coming from your environment or toxic relationships as well. I mean, people are draining, right? So why are you losing your energy? And that's where I got to get to the crux of the problem, the root. The biohacks are just things to help you, like the supplements, again, try to get into your life. And speaking of supplements, in terms of energy, we'd be stupid if we didn't talk about NAD, right? NAD, and again, a lot of people taking these NAD precursors like NMN and R. I'm personally a fan of Dr. Nicola Conlon and her new Cheeto product because it just fixes our own NAD factory. I want to make my own NAD, not just put in widgets into the factory and expect more energy. So go listen to your podcast on that one to know how that works.
And yours. Yeah. Yeah.
And I get really, really good feedback on that. So, as well. So Cheetos is a great one. And, New Cheeto, the other supplements, oh my God, the HRW, water,
molecular hydrogen. Good. Yeah. Molecular hydrogen water. Yeah.
Yeah. And I get good feedback. People getting another little burst of energy. Exercise, of course, is going to build more mitochondria. I know it sounds counterproductive if you're really fatigued, but you got to get a little bit of movement, a little bit more blood flow, and that's it. You know, the breath work helps also with nitric oxide, or you can take an extra nitric oxide supplement. You did a great podcast also on nitric oxide, so that is also really great for energy. You know, again, it's all about with energy. It's really, I would say, get to the root cause of the problem first.
Yeah. And yeah. You have a great expression. What's sapping your energy? Because that's where you're losing your energy is where you're going to want to look for the strategies to shore it up.
Yeah, exactly.
I love
that. What about you? What's your favorite hack for energy?
Well, I think like you, I think it depends where it's going, right? It just depends. And obviously, if you're not sleeping, you're not going to have energy. And, you know, but people get caught in a cycle because they don't exercise because they're not sleeping. And so they don't have energy. So then they can't exercise. And at the end of the day, once you get some of the basics kind of dialed in, like the nutrition and the sleep hacks in that, the sleep hygiene, then we might have to give it a try for a week that we're going to set an alarm. We're going to get up and see the light of day, if it's going to be hard, we're going to move early in the morning. And so if you haven't exercised in 30 years and you're feeling like crap, you're obviously not going to go to the gym and kill it, but just getting outside and going for a walk could be your form of exercise. And by getting up early and getting outside and doing a bit more exercise and moving more, you might find that it's easier to get to sleep at night. You start to implement and actually one thing we didn't really talk about, making sure that we don't eat a good 2 hours before we go to bed so that our body is in a state where it can restore itself. But I think that you kind of, you need a reboot, and sometimes the reboot, it can hurt a little bit initially. But if you can get yourself out of bed first thing in the morning, then maybe you'll have an easier time getting to bed earlier at night. Because I find what happens to a lot of people is they get stuck in this cycle where they don't go to bed, they don't go to sleep till 12 or 1 in the morning. And then, of course, they can't get up in the morning and then they can't exercise. Yeah. And then they can't, you know, like it's just.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And the low hanging fruit with energy really is sleep. I have to say, if you can just get that. And for most people, and there's some interesting study, I can't remember where I heard it from, but most women going through menopause who are not getting good sleep, and it's because of stress. Yeah. Not because of a hot flash, right? Mm-hmm. It's up there, but the number one reason is stress. So figure out the stress and the sleep, and then the energy will likely come.
I love it. Ms. Zora, I can't believe it took us so long to get it together to get you on the podcast. So we're going to have to wrap it up. But why don't you tell people where they can find you, where they can find your amazing podcast, your incredible resources, and your courses?
Yes, hackmyage.com. Everything is Hack My Age. Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn, Facebook, TikTok. I'm everywhere. And just if you can remember Hack My Age, and if you can't remember Hack My Age, Zora the Explorer, you'll find me.
Perfect.
And the programs are there on the website. All these different menopause programs. I have the Energy Reboot for people who are struggling with fatigue. It's quite intense, quite comprehensive, jam-packed. And then I have a masterclass for hot flashes and more masterclasses. There's shorter ones, 1 hour ones. So you can just quickly get your biohacks, learn how to biohack menopause also on the website. And you can also sign up to the newsletter where you're going to get all of the information every month, sometimes a couple times a month. We'll have some newsletters of menopause news, as well as new biohacks that are always coming out and helping us with our menopause symptoms.
I love it. Zora, thank you so much for being here. Thank you so much for taking the time and for sharing your wisdom. And I know that we'll get to do this again soon.
Oh, thank you so much. I had such a good time. And good night, good morning, good afternoon to everyone else who's listening.
That's right. Good night. Before we wrap up today's episode, I'd love to invite you to sign up for my newsletter. Each week, I share my biggest key takeaways from that week's podcast episode, giving you insight into how to take action on what you learned in the interview. Plus, I share the biohacks I'm loving that week and why, as well as facts and tips about peptides for longevity. To join the newsletter, head over to natalienidham.com/newsletter to get access now or find the link in the show notes. Thank you so much for your continued support and for tuning in to today's episode. I wish you all the best this week in biohacking your superhuman performance.